Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into something that's, well, it's a really important part of American healthcare, even now with the ACA, COBRA. It's like that safety net, right, for when you're changing jobs or dealing with other big life stuff.
Exactly. It's the Consolidated Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 1985. Yeah, COBRA is much easier. It's designed to be that bridge, you know? When losing your job might also mean losing your health insurance right when you... You probably need it most.
Okay, let's jump right in. The main idea is you get to keep your work health plan temporarily after certain things happen. When did this actually become law?
It was signed back on April 7th, 1986, by President Reagan. The goal was pretty straightforward. Tackle that really stressful gap where you lose your job and bam, no health insurance. It just provides a way to keep that coverage going for a bit.
Wow, so it's been around for quite a while. Now, the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, that changed things quite a bit, didn't it? How does COBRA fit into the picture today in 2025? Is it still the automatic choice?
That's a super important question for you, the listener, to think about. The ACA definitely shifted the landscape. It brought us the health insurance marketplaces. And, you know, sometimes you can find cheaper plans there, especially if you qualify for those premium subsidies.
The subsidies.
Exactly. Plus, the ACA lined up its special enrollment periods with COBRA qualifying events. So if you lose your job, you usually have a window to sign up on the marketplace, too. It means you really have to weigh your options.
So it's not just a default take COBRA anymore.
Not really. No, you need to look at the cost of COBRA versus the marketplace plans. And not just cost, but also things like, are your doctors in the network? What exactly does the plan cover? The ACA made the decision making, well, definitely more complex.
And COBRA itself, it hasn't just stayed the same since 1986, right? I feel like I've heard about updates over the years.
You're absolutely right. It's been tweaked several times. There was temporary premium help under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. The ACA, like we said, brought the marketplace alternative and new notification rules. During COVID, remember, they extended some deadlines temporarily, and then the American Rescue Plan Act had that 100% premium subsidy for a while.
Oh, yeah, that was a big deal.
It was huge. And even now, we're seeing new guidance on how COBRA interacts with newer things like individual coverage, HRAs. So yeah, staying up to date is crucial.
Wow, it sounds like keeping track is practically a job in itself.
It really can feel that way. That's why having the latest info is so critical, whether you're an employer trying to stay compliant or, you know, you're an individual trying to figure out what makes sense for you.
Which is exactly why we're doing this deep dive today. We want to pull out the really essential stuff you need to know about COBRA. Like, what does it actually cover? Who's eligible? And maybe highlight some of the surprising bits people might not expect.
Exactly. Our goal here is to give you a solid grasp of the COBRA fundamentals, explain how it works as that safety net during transitions, and importantly, point out some of those critical details and complexities you really need to be aware of.
Perfect. So let's start right at the beginning. The absolute basics. What is COBRA continuation coverage, really?
Fundamentally, COBRA gives you the chance to keep the exact same group health insurance you had through your employer. It's identical coverage to what active employees are getting just, you know, after a qualifying event happens.
And which employers actually have to offer this? It's not every single business, is it?
No, not quite. Under federal law, COBRA generally applies to private sector employers who had 20 or more employees for more than half of the typical business days in the previous calendar year.
Okay, 20 or more. What about part-time folks? Do they count?
Yes, they do. You count both full-time and part-time employees. Part-timers are counted as a fraction based on their hours worked. And it's worth noting, state and local governments usually have parallel rules under the Public Health Service Act. Plus, unions or employee organizations that offer group health plans also need to comply. So it covers a pretty broad range of workplaces.
Gotcha. So a lot of employers are covered. What types of health benefits are we actually talking about here? What does COBRA usually apply to?
COBRA can cover quite a variety of healthcare benefits. We're talking about your main medical plan, of course, but also typically dental plans, vision plans, prescription drug coverage, even things like health flexible spending arrangements or FSAs, health reimbursement arrangements, HRAs, and self-insured medical reimbursement plans often fall under COBRA.
Okay, that seems pretty comprehensive. Is there anything it doesn't cover? Like, what's usually excluded?
Yes, there are definitely exclusions. Things generally not covered by COBRA include life insurance, disability insurance, health savings accounts, HSAs, long-term care insurance, and retirement plans. Those aren't considered group health plans for COBRA purposes.
Right. And what about those smaller employers? You said 20 or more for federal COBRA. What if a company has, say, 15 employees? Are they just off the hook?
They are exempt from federal COBRA, yes. But, and this is a really key point for you, if you work for a smaller company, most states have their own laws, often called mini COBRA laws.
Mini COBRA, okay.
Yeah, these state laws often require smaller employers, those not covered by the federal rules, to offer some form of continuation coverage. The rules vary state by state, but it means you might still have continuation rights even at a smaller company. You can't just assume there's nothing available.
That's a really important distinction. Always check your state rules.
Yeah.
You also mentioned earlier that medical care has a broad definition under COBRA. Can you elaborate on that? What kind of services does that encompass?
Sure. For COBRA, medical care is interpreted very broadly. It covers services for diagnosing, curing, mitigating, treating, or preventing disease affecting any structure or function of the body. So that includes physical and mental health services.
Okay.
Think diagnosis, treatment, surgical interventions, but also things like transportation, primarily for medical care, prescription drugs, medical equipment, mental health therapy, substance use disorder treatment, preventative care like checkups and screenings, and even maternal and pediatric services. It's meant to cover a wide range of healthcare needs.
Okay, so we've got the basics down. What it is, who offers it, what it covers. Now let's get into the triggers. What are these qualifying events that actually make someone eligible for COBRA? Let's start with events affecting the employee directly.
Right. For the employee themselves, the main qualifying events are, one, termination of employment, either voluntary or involuntary, like getting laid off, but there's a key exception. Termination for gross misconduct.
Okay, we need to talk about that one.
We do. And the second main event for the employee is a reduction in their work hours that leads to them losing eligibility for the health plan. For instance, going from full-time to part-time might trigger it if part-timers aren't eligible for the plan.
Okay, let's circle back to gross misconduct. That sounds potentially sticky. What does that actually mean? Is there a clear definition?
That's the tricky part. There isn't a specific definition in the COBRA regulations themselves. Generally, courts have interpreted it quite narrowly. It usually means something pretty serious, like willful, intentional wrongdoing that significantly harms the employer's interests. Think theft, embezzlement, maybe serious insubordination, not just, you know, poor performance or occasional mistakes.
So it's a high bar.
It is. And because it's vague, employers really need to be cautious about denying COBRA on these grounds. The best advice is usually to document everything meticulously, apply the standard consistently, consult with legal counsel, and honestly, maybe even offer COBRA in borderline cases just to avoid potential litigation. It's a risky basis for denial.
Good advice. Err on the side of caution there. Okay, what about qualifying events for dependents, spouses, kids? Can they become eligible even if the employee stays on the plan?
Yes, absolutely. There are several qualifying events specifically for dependents. These include the death of the covered employee, divorce or legal separation from the covered employee, the covered employee becoming entitled to Medicare, and a dependent child losing their dependent status under the plan rules.
That last one is usually turning 26, right? Under the ACA.
Exactly. Typically reaching age 26. These events give the dependents their own right to elect COBRA, even if the employee's coverage isn't affected. So, for example, after a divorce, the ex-spouse can elect COBRA for themselves, even if the employee is still working and covered.
That's important. So who exactly falls under the definition of a qualified beneficiary in COBRA terms?
A qualified beneficiary is anyone who is covered under the employer's group health plan on the day before the qualifying event occurred. This can be the employee, their spouse, or their dependent children.
Okay.
And a really crucial point here is that each qualified beneficiary has independent election rights. This means each person, say the employee, the spouse, and each child, can decide separately whether or not they want COBRA.
Oh, interesting. So one person could take it and another could decline.
Precisely. One might take it, another might find coverage elsewhere, maybe on the marketplace. They can also typically choose different coverage options during open enrollment periods if the plan allows active employees to do that. And they might have rights to things like secondary qualifying events or disability extensions based on their own circumstances. It's very individual.
You mentioned documenting qualifying events. Why is that so critical for compliance?
Documentation is absolutely key. The required proof varies depending on the event. For a termination, it might be HR records or a termination letter. For a divorce, it's usually the final divorce decree. For Medicare entitlement, maybe a copy of the Medicare card.
Got it.
Employers need this not just to administer COBRA correctly, but also because ERISA, that's the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, requires them to keep these plan records for at least 6 years. Good records protect both the employer and the beneficiary.
6 years, wow. Okay, paperwork is definitely crucial. Now let's talk timing. The notification process seems to have several steps and deadlines. Can you walk us through that? Because missing a deadline sounds like you could really mess things up for someone needing coverage.
Absolutely. The timelines are strict, and missing them can mean losing rights. It's a multi-step process. First, for events like termination, reduced hours, death of the employee, or the employee getting Medicare, the employer has 30 days from the event date to notify the plan administrator.
30 days for the employer.
Okay. Then, for events like divorce, legal separation, or a child losing dependent status, it's actually the qualified beneficiary's responsibility to notify the plan administrator. They have 60 days from the event date to do that.
So the person have to tell the plan about their divorce?
Yes, within 60 days. The employer might not even know about it. Once the plan administrator receives notice of any qualifying event, either from the employer or the beneficiary, they then have 14 days to send out the COBRA election notice to all affected qualified beneficiaries.
14 days for the admin to send the notice.
Correct. Then, once the qualified beneficiary receives that election notice, they have a 60-day election period. This period starts from the later of either the date their coverage would otherwise end or the date they received the election notice.
60 days for the person to decide.
60 days to elect. And if they elect COBRA, they then have an additional 45 days from the date they elected it to make their first premium payment.
Okay, 45 days for that first payment. That's quite a few dates to juggle.
It is. It really underscores why everyone involved, employers, administrators, and the individuals themselves, needs to act promptly and pay close attention to these deadlines.
Definitely. Okay, shifting focus to the employer side again, administration. What are some best practices for employers to manage COBRA effectively and, you know, stay out of trouble?
Good COBRA administration really hinges on having systematic processes. First off, you need clear ownership. Who is responsible? Is it an internal HR team, a benefits specialist, or are you outsourcing to a third-party administrator, a TPA?
Does outsourcing get the employer off the hook completely?
No, that's a key point. Even if you use a TPA, the employer remains legally responsible for overall compliance. So you still need oversight and clear communication with your vendor.
Right. And you mentioned processes. How important is documenting those?
Absolutely fundamental. You need written procedures covering everything, identifying events, sending notices, calculating premiums, collecting payments, handling terminations, everything. Spell out responsibilities, time frames, use standard templates, and cover how to handle tricky situations. And importantly, review and update these regularly. Laws change, plans change. Think of it as your COBRA playbook.
Identifying the qualifying event seems like a big potential failure point. How can employers get better at catching those?
You hit on a major compliance risk. The best approach is to integrate COBRA processes with your core HR systems. When someone is terminated in the HR system or their hours change, that should trigger a flag for COBRA review. Training managers to recognize potential qualifying events is helpful too. Regular audits of employment status and good coordination between HR, payroll, and benefits departments are also key.
What about managing all those notices we just talked about? Sending them, tracking them.
Notice management is critical. You need a robust tracking system. Know which notices are needed when, ensure timely delivery, and this is important, document proof of mailing. Many employers use certified mail, return receipt requested, or a similar track service for the election notice, at least. Centralizing notice generation with standardized compliant templates helps ensure consistency and accuracy.
And the money side, calculating and collecting premiums. Best practices there.
For premium calculation, you need a documented methodology showing how you arrive at the cost, ensuring it's based on what similarly situated active employees pay, and staying within the legal limits, usually 102% of the cost, or 150% for disability extensions after 18 months. Recalculate these regularly, typically aligned with your plan renewal cycle. Document everything to show it's reasonable and consistent.
And collecting the payments.
Clear protocols are essential. How are payments received, recorded, applied? What happens with insufficient payments or grace periods? How is termination for non-payment handled? Consistency in applying these rules is crucial, though you also need procedures for handling exceptions or errors.
It feels like there's a lot of coordination needed, especially with insurance carriers or other vendors.
Absolutely. Clear communication channels and defined responsibilities with insurers, TPAs, pharmacy benefit managers, etc. are vital. Regular reconciliation of enrollment data and payment information helps prevent coverage gaps or disputes. Keep lines of communication open.
And we can't forget data privacy. especially with health information.
Extremely important. COBRA involves sensitive personal and health information. You need robust security measures, strict access controls, only those who need to know, and full compliance with privacy laws like HIPAA where applicable. Protecting participant data is non-negotiable.
Seems like checking your work periodically would be wise. Should employers do audits?
Yes. Regular compliance audits are highly recommended. Review your processes, your documentation, your outcomes. Are notices timely and accurate? Are premiums calculated correctly? Is payment processing smooth? Is vendor coordination effective? Hmm. Identify weaknesses and implement corrective actions promptly.
And finally, the people doing the work need to know what they're doing, right? Training.
Definitely. Regular training for everyone involved, HR, benefits staff, payroll, even managers is essential. They need to understand event identification, notice requirements, privacy rules, payment handling, and how to coordinate effectively. Keep them updated on any changes.
Okay, it's clear that good administration takes effort and systemization. But even with good systems, I imagine challenges still pop up. What are some of the most common headaches administrators face?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Even the best-run operations encounter recurring issues. It's just the nature of the beast sometimes.
Like just keeping track of where people live. Especially after they leave. That seems like it could be tough.
Address management is a classic one. Former employees move, dependents move after a divorce. It's hard to keep contact info current. Best practices include trying to get alternative contacts like personal emails or cell numbers at hiring or exit, verifying addresses during exit interviews, maybe even annual verification for those on COBRA. And always, always include clear instructions on how to update contact info in your communications.
We talked about dependent events like divorce. How do employers even find out about those reliably?
That's another big challenge because the employer often has no direct knowledge. It relies on the employee or dependent telling them. So you need crystal clear procedures explaining who needs to notify the plan administrator, how to do it, and when, that 60-day window. Educating employees about this responsibility during enrollment and sending periodic reminders helps. Making the reporting process simple is also key.
Payment problems must be common too, right? Late payments, wrong amounts.
Yep. Payment processing issues are frequent. Inconsistent payment timing, mail delays, checks for the wrong amount, people missing the grace period. Clear documentation of rules, detailed instructions on bills, consistent handling of grace periods and shortfalls are crucial. Offering electronic payment options helps a lot. And you need procedures for what to do if coverage is terminated for non-payment. But maybe there was an error or circumstance that warrants reinstatement.
What about coordinating with the insurance companies themselves? Does that always go smoothly?
Not always. Carriers have their own systems, data formats, and deadlines for getting enrollment and termination info. Miscommunications or delays can lead to coverage problems. Formal procedures for data exchange, documented protocols for how you work with each carrier, regular reconciliation of enrollment lists, and keeping records of communications are all important to smooth this out.
And open enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
How do you manage that for people on COBRA alongside your active employees?
That requires careful planning. COBRA participants generally have the same open enrollment rights as active employees. You need to ensure they get the enrollment materials, understand their options to change plans, if applicable, and know about any premium changes for the new plan year. Some employers run a separate COBRA open enrollment cycle. Others integrate it but provide specific instructions for COBRA participants.
Keeping all that paperwork straight for years must be a challenge too.
Documentation management, absolutely. You need records for potentially years after coverage ends. Structured electronic systems are almost essential now. Consistent file naming conventions, secure archiving compliant with retention rules, remember that 6-year ERISA minimum, and periodic audits to ensure records are complete and retrievable are vital.
And just hitting all those different deadlines consistently.
Compliance with the statutory timeframes, 30 days here, 14 days there, 60 days somewhere else, it's a constant juggling act. Automated tracking systems, calendar monitoring, building in buffer periods, and having escalation procedures for approaching deadlines are key strategies to avoid costly misses.
Are there specific situations that just require more expertise, like the really complex cases?
Definitely. Things like handling disability extensions, managing multiple qualifying events for the same family, like our case study later, coordinating COBRA with Medicare eligibility. These require deeper knowledge. You need specific protocols, targeted staff training, maybe checklists, and often enhanced oversight for these more complex, higher-risk scenarios.
What about big company changes,
yeah.
Mergers, acquisitions? How does COBRA fit in?
Corporate transactions add another layer. COBRA obligations need to be addressed during due diligence. The purchase agreement needs to clearly state who is responsible for COBRA for transferring employees and existing qualified beneficiaries. You need smooth transfer records and clear notification to beneficiaries about any changes in administration. It's easy for things to fall through the cracks during a merger if you're not careful.
And one last one, the rise of remote work. Does having employees in multiple states complicate COBRA?
Yes, it does. You need to determine which state's laws apply, especially for mini COBRA, if federal COBRA doesn't cover the employer, or if state law provides better benefits. Often it's the law of the state where the employee works. This might mean creating jurisdiction-specific processes, tracking requirements by location, and possibly needing legal advice for complex multi-state situations. It adds complexity, for sure.
Wow, okay. Lots of potential hurdles. It seems like technology could really help manage a lot of this complexity. What kinds of tech solutions are out there for COBRA management?
You're absolutely right. Technology is becoming indispensable for managing COBRA accurately, efficiently, and also for improving the experience for the people actually using COBRA. There's a range of solutions available.
What about the really comprehensive systems, the all-in-one platforms?
Yeah, there are comprehensive COBRA administration platforms designed to handle the whole process, end to end. They typically manage everything from processing the initial qualifying event, generating and tracking all the notices, handling the election process, billing and collecting premiums, tracking coverage periods, and generating reports.
Do they talk to other HR systems?
Often, yes. Good ones integrate with HRIS and benefits platforms, which is huge for reducing manual data entry and errors. Implementing them can be a significant project, but the payoff in compliance and efficiency can be substantial.
What if a company already has a big benefits administration system? Do those usually handle COBRA too?
Many do. A lot of the major benefits admin platforms have built-in COBRA modules. The advantage there is leveraging the existing employee and plan data already in the system. It can streamline identifying events, make transitions smoother, ensure consistency in plan rules and rates, and offer unified reporting. The depth of COBRA functionality can vary, though, so you need to check if it meets your specific needs.
Notices are so critical. Are there tools just for managing those?
Yes. Specialized notice generation and management systems exist. They focus just on creating compliant templates, automatically personalizing them, tracking distribution and ideally receipt confirmation, and maintaining audit trails. Many offer secure electronic delivery options too, which can be faster and cheaper than mail, as long as you meet the legal requirements for electronic disclosure.
And for handling the money? The premium payments.
Dedicated payment processing systems can handle COBRA premiums. They generate statements, offer various payment methods, online, ACH, check, track payment history, flag delinquencies, generate late notices, and provide detailed transaction records. Integration with financial systems can automate reconciliation, which saves a lot of time and effort.
What about making it easier for the actual participants, the former employees or dependents?
Self-service participant portals are a huge benefit. They allow qualified beneficiaries to go online to make their COBRA election, view their coverage details, make payments, update their address, access documents, maybe even use decision support tools.
Like calculators or comparisons.
Exactly. Maybe comparing COBRA costs to potential marketplace costs, premium calculators, provider lookups. This empowers participants and drastically cuts down on calls and emails to the administrator. It's a win-win.
And does this extend to mobile apps?
Increasingly, yes. Mobile apps offer streamlined portal functions on smartphones or tablets. Think easy payment options, coverage checks, contact info updates. Push notifications for deadlines or payment reminders can be really helpful too. Security, like biometric login, is usually included.
Managing all those documents electronically seems crucial, too.
Absolutely. Document management systems are key for storing and retrieving all the notices, election forms, payment records, etc. They should allow organization by beneficiary, enforce retention policies, offer robust search capabilities for audits or inquiries, and have strong security. Integration with the admin system can automate filing documents as actions occur.
Can these systems help employers analyze how their COBRA program is running? Look for trends.
Yes. Analytics and reporting tools are becoming more sophisticated. Beyond basic operational reports, who elected, who paid, who terminated, they can generate compliance reports, notice timeliness, financial reports, premium reconciliation, and trend analysis. Some advanced tools might even offer predictive analytics, like forecasting future election rates or identifying potential compliance hotspots based on patterns.
You mentioned integration being critical. Why is that connection between systems so vital?
Integration is the glue. Ideally, your Cobra system needs to talk seamlessly with your HRIS for employee data status changes, payroll for termination dates, hours changes, the main benefits admin platform for plan rules and costs, finance accounting for payments, and maybe even directly with carrier systems for enrollments terminations. Good integration minimizes manual reentry, reduces data errors, and just makes the whole process much less burdensome.
So if an employer is shopping for a tech solution, what are the key things they should look for?
Several factors are key. First, compliance. Does it meet current regulations and can it adapt to changes? Flexibility. Can it handle your specific plans and rules? User experience. Is it easy for administrators and participants, if there's a portal, to use? Implementation. What's the time, cost, and effort involved? Support. What level of ongoing help does the vendor provide? Security privacy. Are they robust? And finally, total cost of ownership. Look beyond the sticker price to ongoing fees and potential savings.
Makes sense. Technology can clearly streamline things, but communication seems just as vital. How can organizations communicate effectively about something as complex as Cobra?
You're spot on. Communication is about much more than just sending the legally required notices. A good strategy improves understanding, helps people make informed choices, and actually reduces administrative work by preventing confusion and errors. It needs to be tailored to different audiences at different times.
Okay, let's start with active employees. What should they know about Cobra before anything happens?
The goal here is foundational knowledge. Include basic Cobra info in onboarding materials, during annual benefits enrollment, and on employee portals. Briefly explain what it is, that qualifying events trigger it, and crucially, emphasize their responsibility to notify the company about certain events, especially dependent-related ones like divorce or a child aging out. Periodic reminders in newsletters or benefits updates can help reinforce this.
Then when a qualifying event actually occurs, what's the best way to communicate with the person who's leaving or reducing hours and their family?
This is crunch time for communication. Beyond the formal election notice, provide supplemental materials. Use plain language. Explain their specific options, the exact costs, the deadlines, how to enroll. Personalize it if possible. Maybe include comparisons to marketplace options or links to resources. Following up with non-responders can also be helpful. Did they get the notice? Do they have questions? Ensure they're making an active choice, not just missing the information.
And for those who actually sign up for Cobra, what communication do they need ongoing?
Keep the lines open. Send clear, timely premium notices showing the amount due, due date, grace period, payment options. Provide prompt confirmation once they're enrolled and paid. Proactively communicate any changes, plan changes, premium adjustments, administrator changes. Give them ample notice and information for open enrollment so they can make choices for the next year. And make sure they have a clear contact point for questions, a dedicated email or phone number.
What are the best ways to actually deliver these communications? Is mail still the main way?
For legally required notices like the election notice, mail is often still the default or required method unless you meet strict electronic delivery consent requirements like the eSIGN Act. But for supplemental info, reminders, ongoing communication, use multiple channels. Email, secure messaging via a portal, text reminders for deadlines maybe, the participant portal itself, and phone support for complex questions. Tailor the method to the message's urgency and complexity and the participant's likely preference.
What about language barriers? If you have employees who don't speak English primarily?
That's a really important consideration for accessibility and compliance. Assess your workforce demographics. Do you need to provide standard notices in other languages? The DOL actually provides Spanish versions of the model notices. For other languages, you might need translation services or provide clear information on how participants can request assistance or translated documents. Making information accessible is key.
Even in English, these things can be full of jargon. How could employers make Cobra info easier to actually read and understand?
Readability is huge. Use plain language principles, especially in supplemental materials, short sentences. Common vocabulary. Avoid jargon where possible, or explain it clearly if you have to use it. Use headings, bullet points, maybe FAQs. Visuals can help too, timelines for deadlines, simple charts comparing costs, color coding different sections, anything to break down complexity.
You mentioned those complex situations like disability or multiple events earlier.
Yeah.
Do they need special communication?
Absolutely. These often require targeted, detailed communication. step-by-step guides for applying for a disability extension, clear explanations of how multiple events change maximum coverage periods, specific instructions on coordinating with Medicare. Include checklists for required documents and timelines. You might even have specialized staff or protocols to handle inquiries related to these more complex scenarios.
How can an organization know if its communication is actually working? Can they get feedback?
Yes, getting feedback is crucial for improvement. You could survey participants after they go through the election process. Track the kinds of questions your administrators get most often that tells you where the confusion lies. Analyze response rates or common errors people make on forms. Use that input to refine your notices, your supplemental materials, your website info, your scripts. It should be a continuous improvement cycle.
And how does technology fit into making communication better?
Technology can enhance communication significantly. Electronic delivery, when compliant, is faster and provides tracking. Interactive decision support tools on portals can guide people through choices. Short video explanations can make complex topics more digestible than dense text. Mobile notifications are great for timely reminders. Technology can make communication more dynamic and accessible.
And the staff doing the communicating, they need training too, right?
Definitely. Anyone interacting with participants needs training. They need to provide consistent, accurate information, give them access to approved scripts or talking points for common questions, train them on privacy rules, what they can and can't discuss. And make sure they know the escalation path, who to go to when they get a question they can't answer confidently. Consistent, knowledgeable staff are critical for good communication.
It's clear that communication really needs to be as carefully planned as the administration itself. Okay, let's talk dollars and cents. What are the key financial aspects of COBRA that employers and participants need to understand?
The financial side is obviously a major factor for everyone involved. Understanding how premiums are set, collected, and managed is crucial for compliance by the employer and for informed decision-making by the participant.
So the big one for participants. How is that monthly COBRA premium actually calculated? Where does that number come from?
Right. The premium is based on the total cost of providing the same coverage to similarly situated active employees and their families. This includes both the portion the employer usually pays and the portion the active employee pays.
Ah, so it's the full cost, not just the employee's usual contribution.
Exactly. For fully insured plans, it's typically based directly on the premium the employer pays the insurance company. For self-insured plans, it's based on an actuarial determination of the cost. Employers need to document how they calculate this to show it's reasonable and follows the rules.
And then there's that potential administrative fee on top.
Yes, employers are allowed to add an administrative fee, but it's capped. For the standard 18-month or 36-month coverage period, the fee can be up to 2% of the premium. So the total cost is usually 102% of the plan's cost.
Okay, 102%.
However, if someone gets the 11-month disability extension, the premium for those extra months can go up to 150% of the plan cost. That's a significant jump people need to be aware of. Employers should clearly separate the premium cost and the admin fee on bills. Some employers choose to waive the 2% fee, but they don't have to.
What about the process of collecting those premiums each month? Any financial best practices there?
Efficiency and clarity are key. Have clear procedures for billing and payment processing. Offer multiple payment options if feasible online, ACH, mail. Set consistent processing timelines. Keep meticulous records of payments received and applied. Have clear rules for handling late or insufficient payments, including the legally required grace periods, usually 30 days. Consistency prevents disputes.
What happens when someone does fall behind? How should employers manage that delinquency financially?
You need a systematic approach. Monitor payments closely to identify delinquencies quickly. Send timely late payment notices clearly stating the grace period deadline. Consistently apply the termination rules if payment isn't received by the end of the grace period. While consistency is key, having a process to review potential errors or extenuating circumstances before final termination is also wise. A staged communication approach, reminder, warning, final notice, often works well.
What about situations where someone elects COBRA late, but within the window, and needs retroactive coverage? How does that work financially?
Retroactive coverage requires careful handling. You need to calculate the premiums due for the entire retroactive period, collect that lump sum, or allow installments per your policy. Then coordinate with the insurance carrier or TPA to process any claims incurred during that retroactive period. Ensure providers are notified if needed. Clear communication with the participant about the process and the large initial payment is vital.
Premiums can change, right? Usually once a year when the plan renews. How should that be handled financially and communicated?
Yes, premiums typically change annually, usually coinciding with the plan's open enrollment period or renewal date. Employers must provide advance notice of any premium changes to COBRA participants, usually before the period the new rate applies. The notice should clearly explain the new premium amount and the reason for the change. Billing systems need to be updated accurately. Consistency in applying the new rate is important. Giving more than the minimum required notice is often a good practice.
We mentioned government subsidies earlier, like the temporary ARPA subsidy. How do employers handle the finances when those programs exist?
When subsidies are available, employers, or their TPAs, need processes to implement them correctly. This means adjusting billing to reflect the subsidy, tracking who is eligible, maintaining documentation for potential government audits or reimbursements, and clearly communicating the subsidy details to participants. These systems need to be flexible enough to adapt quickly when new subsidy programs are enacted, as they sometimes are with short notice.
How should employers track the overall financial performance of their COBRA administration, reporting, and reconciliation?
Good financial hygiene is essential. Systematically track billing, collections, and payments. Regularly reconcile the premiums received against the coverage provided and the payments made to carriers, if applicable. Identify and resolve discrepancies quickly. Maintain thorough financial records for audits. Regular reporting gives management visibility into the program's financial status.
Lastly, any tax implications folks should be aware of.
For employers, administrative costs are generally business expenses. For participants, COBRA premiums are typically paid with after-tax dollars. However, those premiums may be deductible as medical expenses if the individual itemizes deductions and meets the threshold for medical expense deductions on their tax return, currently over 7.5% of adjusted gross income. It's complex, and rules can change. Employers should avoid giving tax advice, but can provide general information and always recommend participants consult a qualified tax professional.
Right. Always best to consult a tax pro for personal advice. Okay. So managing the finances is definitely a critical piece. Now, does COBRA administration look different depending on the type of industry or organization? Are there specific wrinkles in certain sectors?
Oh, definitely. The core rules are the same, but the operating environment, workforce characteristics, and common practices within different industries can create unique challenges and require tailored approaches to COBRA administration.
Like, let's start with healthcare organizations themselves. As employers, what's unique for them?
Healthcare employers often have complex benefit structures with multiple plan options, maybe tiered networks, sometimes including their own facilities at preferred rates. Communicating these network nuances to COBRA participants is important. They often have sophisticated HR benefit systems. They deal with unique employee groups like medical residents or fellows with specific transition points. And they might have specific processes related to verifying provider credentials, even for those on COBRA.
What about schools, colleges, universities? Anything special there?
Educational institutions deal with lots of cyclical employment adjuncts, seasonal staff, graduate assistants. Determining if a summer break is a termination or just a temporary layoff for COBRA purposes can be tricky. They might have separate student health plans with different rules. Calculating hours for faculty on 9 or 10 month contracts needs care. And often, different systems manage faculty versus staff benefits, adding complexity. Public institutions also have to navigate specific state rules.
Hospitality and retail often have high turnover and part-time workforces, right? How does that impact COBRA?
Exactly. High turnover means more qualifying events to process. Variable hours and seasonality make tracking eligibility and potential reductions in hours complex. Many operate in multiple locations, maybe with decentralized HR, so robust processes for identifying and communicating events consistently across all sites are vital. And systems need to be accessible for HR staff who might work different shifts.
Construction and manufacturing and the unique aspects there.
These industries often involve multi-employer plans, common in unionized environments. Those plans have their own specific COBRA rules set by the plan trustees and collective bargaining agreements, which can differ from single employer plans. Project-based work in construction means frequent employment cycles. Potentially higher workplace hazards might lead to more disability-related COBRA extensions. Close coordination between the employer, union, and plan administrator is usually required.
How about tech companies? They often seem to have advanced HR systems.
Tech companies often leverage sophisticated HRIS for automation. They frequently have large remote workforces, making multi-state compliance crucial applying rules based on employee location. They also tend to be active in mergers and acquisitions, so handling COBRA during those transactions is common. And given the competition for talent, some tech firms might offer more generous severance, potentially including partially subsidized COBRA premiums.
Financial institutions operate under tight regulations. Does that affect their COBRA approach?
Yes. Highly regulated industries like finance tend to have very rigorous compliance monitoring across the board, including COBRA. Expect highly centralized, meticulously documented processes. They need to be ready for regulatory exams, so strong controls and audit trails are standard. COBRA in M&A is also a key focus, and strong data security protocols impact all their HR and benefits systems.
What about professional services firms, law, accounting, consulting?
Partnership structures can create unique qualifying events when partners leave. Client-facing roles might influence the timing of system access termination versus COBRA start dates. Project-based staffing requires careful hours tracking. Geographic dispersion often means multi-jurisdiction compliance. And these firms often provide comprehensive exit counseling, including detailed COBRA explanations.
We touched on healthcare providers earlier. Anything else specific to them as providers and employers?
Beyond the employer aspects, they have a workforce mix, clinical, administrative support, potentially, with different benefit tiers. 247 operations require accessible systems. Ensuring continuity of patient care can be a background factor in managing staff transitions, and clinical staff licensing often dictates employment patterns, which can influence COBRA triggers.
Small businesses obviously have fewer resources. How does that typically play out with COBRA?
Limited resources are the main story. They often rely heavily on brokers, PEOs, or TPAs for COBRA support. Identifying events and managing notices can be challenging with small or non-existent HR departments. Manual processes might be more common. State mini COBRA laws are very relevant here. Sometimes the more personalized culture means owners are more directly involved in explaining options to departing employees.
And lastly, nonprofits, often resource constrained too.
Similar to small businesses, resource constraints are key. They may outsource or have minimal internal processes. Grant-funded positions create unique termination scenarios when funding ends. Limited benefits budgets make decisions about subsidizing COBRA difficult. However, their mission-driven nature often translates into a strong desire to support transitioning employees as much as possible within their means.
It's really fascinating how the industry context shapes the practicalities of COBRA. Okay, for the professionals listening who handle this day-to-day or want to specialize, what kinds of professional development options are out there to deepen their COBRA expertise?
That's a great question. For anyone involved in benefits or HR who deals with COBRA, continuous learning is really key because the rules and best practices do evolve. Luckily, there are many avenues for professional development.
Are there formal certifications people can pursue?
Yes, several respected certifications cover COBRA as part of a broader benefits or HR curriculum. The Certified Employee Benefits Specialist, CEBS, program is very comprehensive in the benefits space. Also, the main HR certifications, like the PHR from HRCI or the SHRM, CPS, HRM, SCP from SHRM, include COBRA knowledge as part of their required competencies. These usually involve study, passing an exam, and ongoing recertification credits.
What about training programs focused specifically on COBRA?
Absolutely. Organizations like the Employee Benefits Institute of America, EBIA, and the International Foundation of Employee Benefit Plans, IFEBP, along with many benefits consulting firms, offer specialized COBRA training. These can range from basic COBRA 101 workshops to deep dives on advanced topics, compliance audits, or recent legal developments. They often provide certificates of completion.
Do industry conferences usually cover COBRA topics?
Yes, almost any major HR or employee benefits conference will have sessions dedicated to COBRA updates, administration best practices, case studies, or compliance challenges. Attending these is a great way to hear from experts, learn about current issues, and network with peers facing similar situations. Virtual options have made these more accessible too.
What about getting information straight from the source, the government agencies?
That's a crucial resource. The Department of Labor's Employee Benefits Security Administration, EBSA, is the primary enforcer and provides tons of guidance model notices, FAQs, fact sheets, compliance guides on their website. The IRS also has rules related to COBRA premiums and related tax issues. Monitoring their websites and publications is essential for staying current. They sometimes offer webinars, too.
Do professional associations play a role here?
Definitely. Associations like SHRM, World at Work, and IFEBP provide ongoing education, legislative updates, online forums for member questions, and resource libraries that often include COBRA-specific materials. Membership can be really valuable for staying connected and informed.
Keeping up with legal changes seems vital. Any specific resources for that?
Yes, staying on top of court decisions and regulatory changes is critical. Subscribing to legal update services from specialized employee benefits law firms or publishers is a common way professionals do this. These services analyze new developments and explain their practical impact on administration.
What about learning from other people doing the same job? Networking.
Peer networking is incredibly valuable. Formal groups through associations or informal online communities allow professionals to share real-world experiences, ask tough questions, discuss best practices for tricky situations, and learn from each other's successes and mistakes. It's a great way to sanity check your approach.
If you use specific COBRA software or a TPA, do they offer training?
Good vendors usually do. They'll offer training on how to use their specific platform or service effectively, often incorporating general COBRA compliance principles as well. Taking advantage of vendor training is important to maximize the value of the tools you're using.
Are there academic programs that cover COBRA?
Yes. University or college programs in human resources management, employee benefits, or related fields will typically include COBRA coverage within their curriculum, providing a strong foundational understanding within the broader context of benefits law and administration.
And for people who like to learn on their own, self-study options.
Plenty of options there, too. There are books, numerous articles in industry publications, online courses from various providers, relevant podcasts like this one, expert blogs, videos, and case study collections. Self-directed learning combined with practical experience can be very effective. Creating a personal development plan combining some of these resources based on your role and goals is often the best approach.
Great overview of resources.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to really see how these rules play out, let's walk through some practical case studies. Seeing COBRA in action can make it much clearer.
Absolutely. Theory is one thing. Applying it to real-life scenarios is where the understanding really deepens. Let's look at a few common situations.
First up, John Smith gets laid off. He had family coverage. What are the big COBRA issues for John and his family?
Okay. John's involuntary termination is a classic qualifying event for him, his wife Maria, and their two kids. The key things they'll grapple with are understanding the COBRA notice when it arrives, the timelines, the cost. Calculating that premium, let's say it's $2,142 a month for the family, which is often a shock.
Wow, yeah, sticker shock is real.
Definitely. Then, comparing that COBRA option, 18 months max coverage, versus checking the health insurance marketplace. Can they get subsidies there? Maybe a similar plan costs only $750 a month with subsidies. They also need to consider provider networks. Can Maria keep her specialist if they switch? What's the financial impact overall while John looks for a new job?
So what's a smart approach for them?
It often makes sense to elect COBRA initially, especially if there's ongoing medical care like Maria's. This buys them time, maybe a month or two, to thoroughly research marketplace plans without a coverage gap. They should also check if the kids qualify for CHA, Children's Health Insurance Program, which could be much cheaper. Then, once they have all the info or John finds a new job with benefits, they can decide whether to stay on COBRA or switch. He lets them. Weigh continuity versus cost, explore all options, and initial COBRA can be a bridge.
Makes sense. Okay, scenario two. Sarah Johnson is getting divorced. She was covered on her husband Michael's plan. What happens with COBRA?
Divorce is a qualifying event, but only for Sarah in this case, assuming Michael keeps his job and coverage and the kids stay on his plan. The big hurdle here is notification.
Who has to notify?
Either Sarah or Michael needs to tell the plan administrator about the divorce within 60 days of it being finalized. The employer won't automatically know. If they miss that 60-day window, Sarah likely loses her COBRA rights.
Yikes. Okay, so assuming they notify on time.
Then Sarah gets a COBRA notice. She's eligible for up to 36 months of continuation coverage. Let's say her individual premium is $612 a month. Her options are take COBRA, check the marketplace. Divorce is a special enrollment event. Maybe she finds a subsidized plan for $350. Or if she gets a new job, enroll in their plan. But there might be a waiting period, say, 90 days.
What's her best strategy likely?
If she has a new job lined up but there's a waiting period, electing COBRA for just those few months could be perfect. If no job yet, she needs to carefully compare the 36 months of COBRA at $612 versus the marketplace plan at $350. Documentation, divorce decree notification proof is crucial for her. Lesson. Dependent notification is critical. 36 months for divorce is longer than job loss. COBRA can be a useful short-term bridge.
Got it. Scenario three. Hometown Hardware, a small business with 15 employees. They aren't subject to federal COBRA. What happens when they let someone go?
Right, federal COBRA doesn't apply. 20 employees. But T, most states have mini COBRA laws. Let's say they're in Wisconsin. Wisconsin's mini COBRA does apply to employers with fewer than 20 employees. It might offer 18 months of coverage, maybe at 102% premium, but the rules are state specific.
So the owner, Frank, still had an obligation?
Likely, yes, under state law. If Frank just terminated James's insurance without offering continuation, he needs to fix it fast. Under many mini COBRA laws, the insurance carrier actually handles much of the administration. So Frank's first call should be to his insurance company, say Blue Cross Blue Shield.
And the carrier sends the notice?
Often, yes. BCBS would likely send James the state-required notice, giving him maybe 30 days to elect retroactive coverage. To prevent this, Frank needs a simple termination checklist, including notify insurance carrier about state continuation. Good communication with the carrier is key for small businesses. Lesson, don't assume no obligation for small employers. Check state mini COBRA. Carriers often play a big role. Simple processes are vital.
Okay, scenario 4. Robert Anderson is on COBRA after losing his job, and then he turns 65 and becomes eligible for Medicare. How do those interact?
This is a common point of confusion. When Robert becomes entitled to Medicare, usually meaning enrolled in Part A or B, his COBRA coverage may terminate. This generally only affects Robert, not his wife Eleanor, if she's also on COBRA. She can usually continue for the full COBRA period, up to 36 months if the original event allows.
So Robert should just enroll in Medicare?
Yes. Robert needs to enroll in Medicare during his initial enrollment period to avoid late penalties. COBRA is generally not considered creditable coverage equivalent to active employer coverage for avoiding Part B penalties. Once Robert is on Medicare, it becomes his primary payer.
What are their options then?
A few possibilities. A, Robert takes Medicare, keeps COBRA as secondary, expensive and often not necessary if he gets Medigap Advantage. Eleanor stays on COBRA. B, Robert takes Medicare, drops COBRA. Eleanor stays on COBRA. Premium might adjust for single coverage. C, Robert takes Medicare. Eleanor explores the marketplace. They need to compare the costs and coverage of these options carefully. Split coverage, Medicare for him, COBRA, or Marketplace for her, is often the most cost-effective. Lesson, plan Medicare enrollment carefully. COBRA doesn't delay Medicare enrollment penalties. Understand primary-secondary payer rules. Compare costs of split coverage.
Gotcha. Scenario 5. Midwest Manufacturing files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. They had retirees on their health plan. What happens to them?
Bankruptcy adds complexity, but doesn't necessarily eliminate COBRA. If the bankruptcy causes retirees to lose their health coverage, that loss of coverage itself can be a qualifying event specifically for retirees. They might be entitled to COBRA until their death and their surviving spouse dependents for 36 months after the retiree's death.
Who pays for it if the company is bankrupt?
The responsibility generally falls to the bankruptcy estate. Administering it can be tough, especially with self-insured plans and cash flow issues. The company or trustee needs to get court approval for how they'll handle COBRA sending notices, calculating premiums, still capped at 102% usually, collecting payments, maybe ensuring the TPA gets paid to process claims. Clear communication with retirees is vital.
What are the practical options for those retirees?
They need to be informed about COBRA and alternatives. If they're Medicare eligible, Medicare plus a supplement might be better than COBRA. If not Medicare eligible, they should compare COBRA costs to marketplace plans where they might get subsidies. Lesson. Bankruptcy is a qualifying event for retirees losing coverage. Enhanced rights exist. Administration is complex. Clear communication and exploring alternatives are key.
Last one, scenario 6. Emily Chen. Reduced hours, QE1. Then gets a disability determination while on COBRA. Then gets divorced, QE2.
Whoa. Yeah. This is the complex one. Let's break it down. Initial reduction in hours. Qualifying event for Emily. Husband David, daughter Sophie. Max 18 months COBRA. Family premium, $1,785.
Okay, then the disability.
Emily gets SSA disability determination during the first 60 days of COBRA and notifies the administrator within 60 days of the determination. This extends her and Sophie's COBRA by 11 months, total 29 months. But the premium for months 19 to 29 jumps to 150%, $2,625 for Emily Sophie. David's coverage is unaffected by her disability extension.
Then the divorce.
Divorce happens later, say month 10 of COBRA. David notifies the administrator. This is a second qualifying event for David. It extends his maximum coverage period to 36 months from the original event date, the reduced hours. So his coverage might now last longer than Emily and Sophie's 29 months. His premium also becomes separate.
It's a lot to track.
It is. The administrator needs meticulous records. Separate tracking per beneficiary, multiple end dates, premium recalculations at different points, when David splits off, when the 150% kicks in for Emily Sophie, clear, separate communications explaining each person's specific situation, coverage period, and premium are essential. Lesson. Multiple events create different timelines for family members. Disability extends coverage but increases costs significantly. Divorce can extend dependent coverage. Detailed tracking and clear communication are paramount.
Wow, these case studies really show the practical side and just how many variables can come into play with COBRA. It's not simple.
Not at all. They really highlight why understanding the specific rules and how they apply to individual circumstances is so crucial for making informed decisions during what are often already stressful life transitions.
So wrapping up our deep dive today, it's really clear that COBRA, even after all these years and changes in the healthcare landscape, is still a vital, though often complex, safety net.
Absolutely. Understanding those key elements, the qualifying events, the strict notification timelines, the coverage details, the cost is step one. And as we've discussed, knowing how COBRA interacts with the ACA marketplace and Medicare is equally critical for making smart choices.
And those case studies really drove home that there can be surprising nuances. It really pays to look closely at your specific situation, compare all the alternatives, and not just default to one option or another.
Exactly right. It comes down to carefully weighing the continuity and network access COBRA might provide against its often significant cost, and comparing that thoroughly with what else might be available to you through the marketplace or other avenues. It's about finding the best fit for your health needs and your budget.
So our final thought for you, our listener, consider how these COBRA principles might touch your life or the lives of people you know. Being informed about these healthcare continuation rights is really powerful when navigating life's inevitable changes. If this has sparked more questions, keep exploring, keep learning. Thanks so much for joining us on the Deep Dive.